It's a Tuesday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. On today's show, get information about the new invasive black fig fly from UCCE's Houston Wilson. And Taylor Charleston will be in with a report covering information on the third annual Western Region Certified Crop Advisor Scholarship and Honorarium Program. And I'll have a look at national and regional agricultural news with our Regional Ag News Update right after this.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
In regional agricultural news, the annual California Agricultural Statistics Review has been released and is available at www.cdfa.ca.gov/statistics/. This publication provides comprehensive data and information on California's diverse agricultural economy for the 2020 crop year, including agricultural exports and organic production. In 2020, California's farms, ranches, and plant nurseries earned $49.1 billion in cash receipts, which was down 3.3% from the year prior. California's revenue was led by the dairy industry, followed by almonds, grapes, and pistachios. California agricultural exports totaled $20.8 billion in value, which was 2.8% lower than in 2019. However, California continues to lead the nation in agricultural exports. In 2020, California exported approximately 32% of its agricultural production by volume. California is the nation's sole exporter of many agricultural products, supplying 99% or more of almonds, artichokes, dates, figs, garlic, kiwi fruit, olives and olive oil, pistachios, prunes, raisins, table grapes, tomatoes for processing, and walnuts. California organic product sales totaled more than $11.9 billion in 2020. That's an increase of 14% from the prior year. Organic production site acreage increased 6% to just under 2.2 million acres in the state. California accounts for 36% of all organic production in the U.S. California remained the leading state in cash farm receipts in 2020, with combined commodities representing 13.7% of the U.S. total. Over a third of the country's vegetables and two-thirds of the country's fruits and nuts are grown in California. California's top 10 value commodities for the 2020 crop year are number one, milk and cream, number two, almonds, number three, grapes, number four, pistachios, number five, cattle and calves, number six, lettuce, number seven, berries, all strawberries, number eight was tomatoes, number nine, floriculture, and number 10, walnuts. President Joe Biden has appointed Maria Gallegos Herrera as the USDA's Rural Development State Director for California. Herrera grew up in a Central Valley, the daughter of farm worker parents, and served Governor Gavin Newsom's administration as Central California Regional Director of External Affairs. California Department of Food and Agriculture Secretary Karen Ross says that she is offering her most sincere congratulations to Maria on the appointment. Ross goes on to say that she is thoughtful, a dedicated champion for rural communities and farm worker families, and she knows that she will work tirelessly to bring investment and infrastructure and economic development to the most underserved rural areas. Herrera worked at CDFA early in her career, serving as agriculture aide from 2004 to 2007. Mission Produce was founded in 1983 at a time when avocado consumption rates were low, annual U.S. consumption was fewer than 2 pounds a person, and little to no data existed for European consumption. Back then, there were still green skins on the market, but there was also rising awareness of the Haas variety because of its versatile flavor profile. In the past four decades, much has evolved in a global produce industry in the avocado category and in the company, according to Steve Bernard, CEO and founder of Mission Produce. He says when he thinks back to Mission's early days, they could not have predicted all the regions around the world they would be in today. Nonetheless, Mission has been international from the very beginning. In the first year, Bernard met with a large distributor in Japan and asked, "How do they get all of Japan's business?" The distributor said, "Don't let them run out and give them a year-round supply." Therefore, he says, they established operations in Mexico in 1985 to provide fruit during California's off-season. Soon after, the company began distributing to other customers in Asia, Europe, and Canada. They've remained at the forefront of emerging markets ever since. With global avocado demand continuing to outpace global supply, Mission continues to look for sourcing opportunities to produce additional volume for the market. In securing supplies, they work with a global network of growing partners to source from multiple origins year-round. He says the sourcing strategy has taken Mission into premium growing regions around the world, including California, Mexico, Guatemala, the Dominican Republic, Colombia, Peru, Ecuador, Brazil, Chile, Israel, Kenya, and South Africa. Outside the U.S., Mission owns farms in Peru, Colombia, and South Africa. He says vertical integration gives them greater control over their own production and the ability to benefit from additional availability of fruit to help mitigate supply gaps and ensure reliability of supply for customers around the world. Palm Wonderful, a grower and producer of fresh pomegranates and pomegranate juice in the U.S., is furthering its commitment to a sustainable future with a transition to 100% recycled plastic bottles and shifting more than 90% of its electricity needs to renewable energy. Throughout North America, starting in May of 2022, all 16-ounce bottles of Palm Wonderful juices, 100% pomegranate juice, pomegranate blueberry, 100% juice, and pomegranate cherry 100% juice will be bottled in 100% RPET. The new bottles will feature a 100% recycled plastic logo. The commitment is just the beginning of the company's overall strategy and transitions more than 11 million bottles to 100% recycled bottles annually as the brand approaches its 20th anniversary this fall. The company completed work on a solar farm at its processing plant in Del Rey, California. This project, operational in June of 2022, is expected to deliver more than 90% of the company's electricity needs by 2023. These initiatives are part of the company's larger sustainability roadmap to reduce its carbon footprint and build a more sustainable future through responsible agriculture and farming, energy, waste, packaging, and emissions.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
Our first feature report here today on the new invasive black fig fly.
Figs may not be the state's biggest crop in terms of acreage, but a pint-sized pest is causing some big headaches for the state's fig producers. The black fig fly, as the pest is commonly called, is roughly an eighth of an inch long. Based on literature research, Houston Wilson, a University of California Cooperative Extension Assistant Specialist in Entomology, said the pest is native to the Mediterranean.
The early descriptions of the species came from a researcher in Italy in the early 1900s. And then there's subsequently been reports of it from Greece and Turkey and France and a number of other countries in the Mediterranean and Middle East region.
More recently, the black fig fly was found in Mexico in 2020 and now Southern California in 2021. So far, Wilson said there have been no reports from the state's major fig production area that includes Merced and Madera counties. Nevertheless, he said they're putting together a big response to this invasive pest.
The original infestations were reported from counties in Southern California. So at this point, we've had reports from most of the counties south of the Tehachapi, with the exception of Imperial County. And then we've had reports from Ventura and Santa Barbara County as well, out getting up along the Central Coast. And then I just heard from somebody in San Luis Obispo that they may have it as well. So right now, just limited to the Central Coast and the Southern California area, but a majority of the commercial fig production in California takes place in the Central Valley, specifically in Madera and Merced counties. And so we are concerned about the ability of this insect to move into those regions. And we do think it poses a risk to the fig industry. It's very specific to figs. It's given the name, of course, black fig fly. Figs are its only known host, and it directly attacks the developing fruits, causing them to spoil and also prematurely drop from the tree. So that's something we're pretty significantly concerned about.
As part of research efforts, Wilson said he is joined by two postdoctoral fellows, as well as farm advisors in the affected areas. They already have a big summer research plan to try to learn more about this new pest and its life cycles in California.
Well, so initially, it was myself and my postdoc, Dr. Katie Britt, that initially responded to the infestations last summer, but subsequently have brought on another postdoc, Dr. Vali Ibrahimi, and she's really going to be working with me most closely at this point to lead our research and extension efforts. There's also farm advisors who have been working in fig production areas. That includes Phoebe Gordon in the Madera Merced area, Ben Faber out in Ventura, and Sonia Rios in Southern California.
As its name implies, the black fig fly feeds on figs. Unlike some fruit flies that prefer mature or rotting fruit on which to lay eggs, the female fig fly searches for immature fruit, and it's the egg laying and subsequent feeding by the larva that Wilson said damages the fig. Frequently, that fruit will drop to the ground.
The adult fly ovoposits into the ostiole of the fig. That's the opening at the far end of a fig fruit. So she'll deposit her eggs there, and then the developing larva, they feed on the synconia. That's the tissue beneath the skin, the surface of the fruit, but above the kind of inner cavity of the fruit itself. So they feed on that synconia, and then once they've completed their development, will make their way out of the fruit and pupate in the soil. So they'll drop down to the soil and pupate. And the insect can have multiple generations per year. We're not entirely sure how many generations they'll have under California conditions, but that feeding damage, of course, damages the fruit. The, you know, exiting leaves a hole in the fruit. They have a really strong preference for developing fruit, so green or underripe fruit is what they go for, and that will cause the fruit in many cases to prematurely drop from the tree.
A McPhail trap, which is a glass jug filled with water and a yeast attractant, can be used to monitor for the black fig fly. But Wilson said the problem with it is it also catches a lot of other insect pests. That means the PCA has to sort through all of the wet insects and separate the fig fly from the other catches. This summer, he said they will be comparing a different type of lure to the McPhail trap in field trials. The researchers also are working with colleagues in Israel who may have identified plant volatiles that attract or repel the fig fly.
What's recommended at this point is the use of a McPhail type trap baited with Torula yeast. And there's also evidence from the scientific literature that a lure that's comprised of ammonium sulfate and hexanol can also be an effective lure that potentially doesn't have as much bycatch as the yeast lure would. We're working with a couple lure manufacturers right now to get that hexanol and sulfate combo lure put together, and we're going to be trialing that in comparison to the Torula yeast this summer as part of one of our research projects for this insect. What we want to do initially is compare those two lures in a McPhail trap. So if the ammonium sulfate hexanol lure works well, we may go ahead and try it out in a Delta trap or a Jackson trap, some sort of a sticky type trap, just because that might be easier to, you know, for an individual to process versus this liquid slurry or whatever that's in a McPhail trap. There isn't a pheromone for this insect, but we are working with some colleagues in Israel who have done a lot of preliminary work to show that there's certain plant volatiles that unripe figs produce that are attractive to the black fig fly. And they took that a little bit further and saw that pollinated versus unpollinated figs had different compounds that were, some were attractive and some were repellent to the black fig fly. And so we have a proposal to put in for funding. We should hear back about it, I think, in June. And if that's funded, we would partner with them to continue working to characterize those volatiles, synthesize them, and then put them into a lure form, which may give us something that's more specifically attractive to black fig fly, and then could be used in either a McPhail trap or potentially some other, like a sticky trap that might be a little bit easier to handle. And on the other side, the repellent compounds may actually work, you know, as a potential control strategy to put those onto a fig tree to keep the flies away.
Also, as part of the research, Wilson said he and his team will evaluate a few currently registered products. He said colleagues elsewhere, like protein bait attractants, are laced with a small amount of pesticide. One used by walnut growers for husk fly is GF120. It also is listed for use on organic orchards. One of the challenges with any chemical control is the fig fly spends much of its life as a larva protected inside the fig. So getting a control material inside the fig is nearly impossible.
Control strategies are fairly limited. We really don't think that there's very good biological control of this insect. The little bit of work that's been done previously reported one pupal parasitoid species that was found attacking it. And it was sort of an offhand report in a very old piece of the literature. And the parasitoid that they're reporting, we do have it in California, but it's a very generalist parasitoid. So it has something like over 60 different insects that it's known to attack. So we're not really sure if that's a really viable strategy. Cultural controls, we do recommend, you know, where you have fallen fruit to, you know, try to remove those immediately. And there is some thought about pursuing strategies looking at, you know, management of the soil around the tree to reduce the survival or the pupation. That's really more on a kind of a hobby grower, kind of single tree type of scale. Chemical controls are difficult because, you know, they spend most of their life inside of the fruit, so they're pretty well protected from contact products. One of the strategies that other researchers in the Mediterranean Middle East that we've spoken to, they were pretty keen on these proteinaceous baits, something like GF120 that, you know, is targeting the adult stage with this attractive bait that they would feed on, and it's laced with some type of insecticide. So some of those products too are, we're going to be evaluating that. We don't have any specific chemical recommendations for this insect at this point, but there's evidence of stuff that could be effective, and we're going to start trialing that this summer as well.
For more information about the black fig fly, visit ucanr.edu/sites/BFF. That's B as in boy, F as in Frank, F as in Frank.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
In national agricultural news now, agricultural credit conditions improved in the first quarter of 2022, and farm real estate values continue to increase alongside strength in the American farm economy. Following a year of accelerating increases, the value of non-irrigated cropland across much of the country has soared through March of this year. The sharp growth in land values increased despite a slight increase in farm loan interest rates. Farm loan repayment rates continue to increase, and credit conditions remain strong. Many district lenders do expect conditions to soften in the coming months alongside the pressure on farm margins from higher input costs and harsh drought conditions in large parts of rural America. Farm real estate markets also remain strong, but smaller profit margins or higher interest rates could limit gains in land value in the year ahead. Experts say it's important to realize that modern farm technology is vulnerable to attacks by hackers, which could leave the supply chain exposed to further risk. The University of Cambridge issued a report noting that automatic crop sprayers, drones, and robotic harvesters are susceptible to an attack. BBC says both the United Kingdom's government and the FBI are warning the cyber attack threat is growing. John Deere says it's working to fix any weak spots in its software. James Johnson, Deere's chief information security officer, says the company has been working with several ethical hackers to find vulnerabilities. CNH Industrial is also working to improve its security posture. Benjamin Turner, chief operating officer at a British company called Agrometrics, says hacking into one tractor can upset a single farmer's profitability. Hacking into a fleet of tractors can suddenly give you the power to affect yields in whole areas of the country. Theft, war damage, and more are complicating the Ukraine export crisis, further squeezing tight world grain supplies and fueling food inflation. The world grain stocks problem starts this year in Ukraine. USA World Outlook Board Chair Mark Jekanowski.
Could some of those stocks be basically taken by Russia and shipped back to Russia and enter the world market through those means? Or how much of the stocks that, you know, that we assume are remaining in country might have been damaged because of the war itself.
And even if stored or new food products can get out of the country by land, the volumes can't come close to shipments out of Ukraine's Black Sea ports that are blocked by Russia. In the meantime, India has banned food products as well. Former USA chief economist Joe Glauber, now at the International Food Research Policy Institute.
With this ban, does that mean no stock, no exports, or does that mean some? And it certainly seems that India's been upfront saying they're going to honor any letters of credit, they're going to try to export to their neighbors like Bangladesh.
Glauber says those dependent on Ukraine can get food products and other supplies, but the cost has gone up by as much as 40%.
North Africa, Middle East, Central Asia, all of those are seeing higher prices for wheat products. And, you know, it's not lost on people that that's where the Arab Spring was, the food riots.
And Glauber says no one knows how long the war will last. Media reports say Russia's already threatening to annex parts of southern Ukraine. In the meantime, U.S., EU, and UN are stepping up humanitarian aid to stave off a food crisis that could see millions go hungry or starve this fall. Growth Energy and the Environmental Protection Agency reached a settlement on a deadline for issuing the 2023 renewable volume obligations for blending ethanol into the fuel supply. The EPA is expected to file a notice in the Federal Register today seeking comment on a proposed decree that would require the EPA to propose the 2023 RVOs by no later than September 16th. The agency would then finalize it no later than April 28th of 2023. EPA's notice comes after Growth Energy filed a notice of intent to sue and a complaint in federal district court after the EPA failed to set the RVOs by the congressionally mandated deadline. Securing a deadline for the 2023 RVO is a significant victory in their mission to ensure certainty when it comes to biofuel blending, according to Growth Energy CEO Emily Score. She says especially as they face a new era of the RFS when volumes are set by EPA and not Congress. USDA research engineer Mark Williams discusses some of the study he is conducting on reducing nutrient runoff, work that has led to his nomination for a Samuel J. Hyman Service to American Medal, otherwise known as the SAMI Award. USDA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
One of the things we've been looking at is the way fertilizers are applied to fields. So whether they are just broadcast on the soil surface, whether they're incorporated into the soil with tillage, or whether they're injected into the soil in some way. So one of the practical things we're looking at is how does nutrient loss differ between those different ways of applying fertilizer? What we're finding is that if you're broadcasting the fertilizer on soil surface, that can lead to much greater nutrient loss versus if it's incorporated into the soil or injected. That's something that's very broadly applicable to a lot of agricultural acres, is that if we can get the fertilizers in contact with the soil better, then there's a much less risk of loss following application. So that's one method where it's kind of some low-hanging fruit where we could make a large difference in reducing nutrient loss on a lot of agricultural land just by doing some of those easier to implement kinds of practices.
Unsure of your naval orange worm program? No worries now with Rango, a proven solution to protect your orchard and hull split from naval orange worm. Rango is an OMRI-listed, broad-spectrum biopesticide with no known resistance, making it an excellent rotation and tank mix partner for both conventional and organic growers. Partner with Rango today. Contact your PCA, local dealer, or visit rangonow.com. Rango, no worries now.
Taylor Chalstrom is up next with information on the 3rd Annual Western Region CCA Scholarship and Honorarium Program.
The Western Region Certified Crop Advisor Program is announcing its 3rd annual scholarship program for students interested in agronomy and obtaining their certified crop advisor credentials. Scholarship recipients are the next generation of leaders in the ag industry in the eyes of Western Region CCA. The Scholarship and Honorarium Program, called the Alan Rowe Mander Scholarship and Honorarium WRCCA Program, consists of four $1,000 scholarships to undergrad students, one from each of the following four regions: Arizona-California Desert Region, California Coast Region, California Northern Valley Region, and the California Southern Valley Region. The scholarship application features a series of questions and will be scored on the following: describing coursework, year in school, GPA and major, scholarships, awards, and other forms of recognition that you've received, describing your leadership involvement at school and in the community, your professional commitment to ag and work history, and your pathway to earning the CCA credential in the near future.
Our goal in this scholarship and faculty award program is to recognize these new students, these undergraduate students that are just about to enter industry and that want to become certified crop advisors. You know, they want to take the exams, they want to go through the training and put the time in to become CCAs. And then on the other hand, we recognize that these faculty members are so crucial for the training and for the mentorship of these students. We also want to provide an award for those ag faculty that are involved in the training of the students.
That was Carl Wyant, Western Region CCA Board Chair. In addition to the scholarship program, Western Region CCA will be offering teaching honorariums to professors who teach agronomy-related coursework. There are four $500 honorariums available, one for each scholarship region: the Coast, Desert, North Valley, and South Valley. To apply, teachers are required to write and submit a plan of how they would utilize the funds to help students learn more about agronomy. These plans will be submitted online through the scholarship homepage at wrcca.org. Wyant explains the application process further.
We've really opened up this program to recognize the diversity of agriculture in the Western Region CCA program, which covers California, Arizona, and Hawaii. And so we have four $1,000 scholarships available for students. And those four scholarships, we award one from each region. So we have the Arizona-California Desert region that covers Phoenix to San Diego and the Inland Empire. We have the California coast from Oxnard north to Napa Valley. And then we split the Central Valley into two. And so we have the Southern Valley, which is Madera down to Bakersfield, and then the Northern Valley, which is Merced to Redding. So lots of diversity here, lots of opportunity. And we have the same for the faculty mentor program, and that's four $500 honorariums for the faculty member from those same four regions. So there's eight total awards. And so since we have so many awards, we have a fairly simple application process. It's online. You can go to www.wrcca.org and click on the awards tab, and it'll take you right to the student application and then to the faculty award application. And it's an online form. You don't have to go fill out a bunch of paperwork or type out a bunch of stuff and mail it in. So it's fairly quick. And once we get those applications in, we bring in those applications into a committee, and we start working through each application, scoring them, looking at the different questions that the students are answering or the faculty project that's been proposed. And we score them and we rate them. And every year the selection process has intense competition. And every year we pick some really great winners for these awards.
Western Region CCA is continuing to promote the scholarship and teaching honorarium program to get more recognition about the role of being a certified crop advisor.
This program, we launched it during COVID in 2020, and we really had to fight hard to get the word out to the students and to the faculty that, hey, there's this great program that you can be a part of. And we've just been able to grow that. You know, one way we've done it is by working with organizations like JCS, just to get the word out. Hey, there's this opportunity, take advantage of it, and other publications. The reason why this matters is because we need certified crop advisors, and the next pool of advisors is coming from this undergraduate student body and their faculty mentors that help train them. So we want to recognize that pipeline and that pathway to success, and we feel that incentivizing and recognizing the students and faculty with an award is a great way to do that.
The Scholarship and Honorarium Awards will be presented at the 2022 Crop Consultant Conference this fall in Visalia, California. More details to come on that. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.